We got some great stories lined up for you guys today, but first, let me talk to you about a company who's making it possible, Red Bobber. Their tagline is "Reel in those precious memories." They're a lifestyle brand, and when you see their logo, that Red Bobber, a little hint of nostalgia comes back to those early days when you were fishing out there with just a bobber and a hook and making memories out there with your family. For the listeners, they're giving a discount code for 20% off your order. The promo code is HAP. You can find them at redbobbergear.com. Y'all go check them out. What you're about to enjoy is a storytelling held at the Airport Road Church of God of Prophecy in Jasper, Alabama. Shane and I were blessed to be invited to their men's event, and we each tell about three stories, and then as a bonus, Shane shares his testimony. We really hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome.
All right.
We ain't got no Bobcat stories, but
I thought he was going to break out a Black Panther story right out of the gate.
Sure, we was going to hear about a Black Panther.
People love to tell us those Black Panther stories when they come on the show.
We talk about Walker County a lot. We're out here in the middle of it now, aren't we? In the middle of it, and there's bound to be a Black Panther around here somewhere.
Guaranteed. There's one, what was that, Bug Tussle? Where he said two sightings of Black Panthers. He swore to it.
That's Coleman County, though. They don't want to talk about that.
Oh, we ain't got crossed over. I'm sorry.
That's right.
I'm sorry. We just before the line. Well, we're going to paper, rock, scissors to tell some stories. We've thought a few to bring to you guys tonight, and we couldn't decide who's going to go first, so we're going to do it like first graders. We're just going to paper, rock, scissors.
Now, are we going to paper, rock, scissors, shoe? As my four-year-old says, she says, paper, rock, scissors, shoe.
No, I don't like that. I like the old one.
Just paper, rock, scissors. All right.
You ready?
Oh, that's bad. I got you.
Okay,
I go first.
All right, well, I'm going to tell you all a little story. Back in high school, it was my senior year, and we got through Christmas break, and it was right before baseball season. That little bit of time before baseball season started, my mom asked me if I wanted to take one of my friends up to Gatlinburg. We're just going to go for a weekend trip, leave out on a Friday after school, stay Saturday, come back home Sunday. Well, I was so excited, so I asked my buddy, my shortstop on the team, Britt, if he wanted to ride up there to Gatlinburg. We got up there Friday night and messed around like, you know, senior boys do, running around the strip, seeing if anybody was out. Well, that next morning, my mom said, "Do y'all want to go snow skiing?" I said, "Yes, I definitely want to go snow skiing." Britt was all in. He was all in to go snow skiing, so she just dropped us off, and we just, I guess you take the lift up there. I'm not sure how you get up there. It's been so long ago. We're on our own with a credit card. So we go in and we said, well, what do we need to go?
That's dangerous.
Yeah. What do we need to go snow skiing? I mean, we had no idea. We're rednecks from Hayden, Alabama. We've never seen it even snow hardly more than an inch. And they said, well, you need to rent some skis and some sticks, and you may want a jacket, because, of course, we didn't have a jacket or anything like that. And I said, okay, well, we got what we need. We go right outside the door. We put on our skis, and we're standing there just, we're thinking, we made it. I mean, this is it. We're in Gatlinburg. We're fixing to do some skiing,
dumb
baby.
Dumb and dumber fitting
your skis. Yeah, dumb and dumber. And all we needed to know at this point is how to get up the mountain. And they said, all you got to do is go over there to that lift, get on the lift. It'll take you up the mountain, and you come down. Well, we're sitting there stumbling and falling, trying to get to the lift, but we've already got our skis on. And we get to the lift, and right before that we get to the lift, I'm sorry, there was this guy came up to us, and he's like, guys, what are y'all doing? And I said, we're going skiing.
What are we doing?
We're going skiing. He said, you can do what you want to, but, you know, for $20, I will teach you guys in 15 minutes. Give me 15 minutes and $20, and I'll teach you guys how to ski so that you don't kill yourself trying to come down this mountain.
I'm sure he would teach you that.
He's going to teach me. I said, well, we ain't got $20, but we got time. It's time to go skiing. So we get on that lift, and that was a debacle trying to get on that thing. It never stops moving, if you've ever seen one of those. We get up at the top of the mountain, and I'm telling you what, fellas, that is not snow in Gatlinburg. That's an icy is all that is. It's just like you go to a snow biz, and it's what it is. And so every time you fall, it's like falling on concrete. After I fell three or four times, I said, Britt, I mean, I'm willing to get on my rear end and just inch down this mountain. Well, we finally made it. We didn't go to the Double Black Diamond, even though we thought about that. But we didn't, thank God. And we get down to the bottom, and it's where it's just a pretty decent little slope headed back in. We're done. Well, Britt catches some momentum from somewhere. I don't
know. That's called gravity. I don't know if y'all boys ever know.
But although from the whole time to the top of the bottom, we never slid more than 3 feet at a time, he's going now. I'm talking about, and he is going. And I'm just watching him because I'm stopped. I don't want to go no more. And he's going, and he's going. He's turning around. Philip, I'm like, buddy, I can't help you. There's nothing I can do. And as he gets closer down the mountain, I notice what's ahead of him. There's a whole group of people just right there in front of him.
Obstacles.
And he's just screaming. There's nothing he can do. He's putting the sticks, trying to make the sticks go this way, anything. And he plows over the one that's standing closest to him. I mean, just pummels him. I'm laughing like a good friend. You know, I'm laughing. Well, I finally get down there, and that guy is saying things I can't say in this church. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He's saying things we can't say in here. And when he turns over, guess who it was? The ski instructor.
$20
tried to get us the $20. He pummels the ski instructor, and he is so mad. And I'm like, Britt, get up. Let's go. We couldn't turn in our skis fast enough. But let me tell you something. There's a good lesson there about life. You're not going to be good at everything you do the first time. Mm. And when it comes to this Christian walk that I hope we're all in, that many of us are in, when you become a new Christian, you can get discouraged because you're not on the 100th level of sanctification the next day after you get saved. Gentlemen, it takes time. Sure. You're not going to be good at it the first time, but if you'll keep praying, you'll keep seeking the Lord, eventually you can get down them hills on two skis and not have to knock down the instructor when you get to the bottom.
And not only that, you could sometimes save a lot of face by just spending $20. Let me just give you $20.
$20 tip.
Hey, there's a lot of folks, there's some men in here been in a way for a while. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, hey, boys, don't go that way. Don't do that. You might say, no, I know what to do. And they'll say, if you just give me $20, I can save you a lot of headache, mm-hmm. a lot of shame. But it happens.
That's it. But $20 in 1999 was a lot different than
like
$20.
Like you say, you didn't have $20.
I didn't have $20. Tell us one.
I was in high school in a similar situation where you're just being boys. We was in ag class, and I loved ag class. Mr. Mills was one of my favorite teachers because he just let you be boys. And one day we got out behind ag class, and there was at Hayden High School, at the old school, across the practice field was the cesspool, the septic tank.
It's exactly what he said.
It was an open lake where all of Hayden's sewer came to settle out. And what did we do as boys? We wanted to throw rocks. So we would throw rocks as hard as we could, as many as we could, as far as we could, and see who could throw the best. One day during ag class, Mr. Mills said we had done all the shop cleanup. It was nice. It was spotless. Mr. Mills said, get outside, boys. We said, hey, that's what we wanted to hear. Out the door we went. We had an old boy named Quick Draw, and that's what everybody knew him as Quick Draw. Quick Draw was a good kid, and he was not quick about much of anything. Well, I don't know why he got the name Quick Draw, but I think it was because he did this whirly bird. He was a black belt, and
He
knew some karate. Well, Quick Draw didn't go out with us. He stayed behind, and it was colder. It was in the fall of the year and kind of cool that day, and I wore a sweater that day. And I got out there, and I was throwing rocks. Boy, I was letting them go. And as you throw, you get warmed up. You know, you won't throw it as far as I can. Oh, yeah, I can throw as far as you can. I found me a good flat stone. I felt like David, you know, I'm going to pick me a good one out. I got a hold to it, and I said, watch this, boys. And I reared back, and I sailed it. When I did, my sleeve of my sweater curled over my hand, and it caught that rock. And when it did, it hooked a rot. And I thought, that ain't good. That's not the, it was supposed to go this way. It hooks a rot.
It's in reverse.
Quick Draw's coming around the corner of the gym. I see it. You know, in these times when the rock has already left your hand, there's no gathering it back. It's in slow motion. I see it headed straight towards Quick Draw. It hits him right in the top of the head. Quick Draw does one of these. And he runs in a circle. And I thought, oh, no, I've killed him.
I killed Quick Draw.
The first thing out of Johnny Mills' mouth, you've killed Quick Draw. I felt so bad. Awful. He's pouring blood. We go over there. We got to break out the first aid kit. We get him patched up. Quick Draw lives to see another day. But I learned that day, when you throw rocks, it may hit folks that you don't want it to hit. In life, don't throw rocks, right? When we say things, as we get older, young people, once you say words, once they come out of your mouth, there's no gathering it back. I wanted to gather that rock back so bad. I wanted it to come back to me, so I didn't throw it because I knew I had hurt somebody that day that did not have anything to do with what I was doing. He was an innocent bystander, friendly fire, as they speak. Sometimes, as you get older, you want to say something, think about what you say before, because once you say it, you can't take it back.
Can't put her in reverse.
Can't back her up.
Not at that point. I had a night that I wanted to put something in reverse.
Yeah.
How many in here has ever coon hunted?
We got a handful in here.
All right, so for those who have never been coon hunter, don't know anything about it, it's a sport you do with dogs, and some you may not even shoot the animal. It's more of the sport of the dog, following the dog and letting it hunt the raccoon. We used to do it all the time. We competition hunted, friendly hunted. Well, one night Shane couldn't go, and I had my buddy Bradley with me, and we had three fine hounds. 2.5 pounds.
Was Arthur Ritus with you that night?
No, Arthur wasn't with me. But I had old Red, who was still in transition to become a coon dog from a deer dog. That's why he's 2.5. You know, so he just decided on what he ran first thing he smelled, I think. We had this real good spot that we had just accumulated. And, I mean, it was a sure thing. Every time we went, we treed. And it wasn't far. We didn't have to walk far. It was just nice walking and everything. Well, we went there, and we cut loose, and the dogs tore out down there. And, man, they got on the track. It wasn't no time. I said, we're gonna be done pretty quick tonight. And they started treeing, and then silence. How does three coon dogs go silent? Bradley looked at me. I don't know how three coon dogs go silent either. So I said, well, we're going to go to the last place we heard them. We got down there, and when we got up, within what we know now was about 50 yards, we was hearing, where's these dogs at? Bradley said, they in the ground. I said, I ain't never treed in the ground before. We're treeing. You know what I'm saying? Usually that's the tree.
In the ground,
yeah. We got down there and there's this pond, and then the spillover from the pond kind of made a ditch, and that ditch went into a hole about that big in the ground. And it had a dam up over it. So you imagine there's this big hole right here and then a muddy bank. All we could see is one of the dog's tails sticking out like this out of that thing. And I told Bradley, I said, what are we going to do? He said, I don't know. We got to do something. I said, well, I'm not getting in that hole. I can tell you that. My dog can stay there all night for all I care.
You ain't calling him out.
He said, here's what we'll do. We'll get him out one at a time. The coon ain't going to run out. He's going to stay in there. All right. Well, he went in there, got one dog out. I got a leash and put it on that dog and pulled it back. He went in there, got the other dog, pulled it out. I put it on a leash. So I'm sitting there holding me two fine hounds that are just going nuts. I mean, they're just, oh, oh, oh. Bradley gets in there and gets the last one. As he's getting that last dog out, he said, there's a coon in here. I can see it. He is in attack mode in the back of that hole, you know, just ready for somebody to come want some more. He gets that one. So now I've got all three dogs leashed up. And I said, all right, what are we going to do? We good? He said, no, we're going to get this raccoon. I said, oh, you are?
You said we.
He said we. I said you. So he said, here's what we're going to do. I want you to get all three of those dogs, and I want you to hold them right there above the hole on that bank that's right above it. And he said, I'm going to get me a stick, and I'm going to poke this raccoon. I'm going to make it mad. And when I tell you to let them dogs go, let them go.
It's a good plan.
I said, are you sure? He said, I'm sure. So that's what I did. I just like the holes right there below me, I'm sitting there, and the all dogs, they're just still just boom, 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 all over that. Bradley's... All I can see is him down there, you know, that old arm going in with that big old stick. I said, let the dogs go. And he's just, you ever seen a crab crawl backwards like that? That's him. He's getting out of there, spiraling out. And there goes the raccoon. I've let the dogs go. All three dogs right after that raccoon. And the raccoon goes out there to the middle of the pond. And I said, well, what now?
Even playing field.
And he just out there just doing this, just looking at them. I got my big old coon light on me. It's daylight. You know, I'm looking. I said, all right, where goes Red, my half deer dog, half coon dog? He's going to get him. Well, he gets out there in the middle of that pond, and he's trying to bark as he's going out there, you know, with the water and all. And he goes to bite that coon, and that coon does raccoon jiu-jitsu, and he flips around on that dog's head and sits on top of it and just pushes his head down and looks at me. I don't know what to do. I don't want to go out there in the pond with raccoon and him do the same thing to me. But my dog's dying. All I'm seeing is bubbles, coming up. And that raccoon ain't going nowhere. He is locked on. Before I could even turn around, a flash goes right by me. Here goes Bradley with that stick that he's poking. He just is going out through that pond, and he gets out there, and he gets about 3 feet, brings it from Aunt Nancy's house as hard as he could bring it, and goes, slap! That raccoon goes tumbling off, and here comes Red up out of the ground. And I was like, oh, my goodness. And Red, he's immediately swimming back to me.
He's a deer dog again.
He don't want nothing else in the pond. Raccoon goes the other way. Bradley comes back this way, and that raccoon got out of the water on that bank and did the
shake it off.
Shook it off and turned around and looked at us and walked off. And I said, you win. You have absolutely got it. Now, in that situation, I was in a state of fear. I didn't want to act. My dog's dying. I was sitting there on the bank. I didn't want to do nothing. When you have a good Christian brotherhood around you, God's going to strengthen men around you to go out there and enter into situations and be in situations with you that you ain't going to go in by yourself.
Sure.
But if you're alone, without God in those situations, you all alone, just like you said. But that night, I was thankful for Bradley, and I was thankful for that stick, and I was thankful that he saved that old red coon dog that I love.
He turned back deer dog, or did he ever come back? He come back coon dog.
He come back around. I think he hated him even more after that
night. I will say, I never saw him get back in the water, though.
No, you couldn't make that dog get in the pond.
I've got a dog story. Back in the 90s, we had a dog named Ronald, old feist dog. He was a man's dog. I mean, he would fight a grizzly bear if it come to. I mean, he was just gritty.
He bit his brother's nose off one time.
He did do that. You didn't get in his face.
You don't get in his face
because he's going to chew on something.
Mm-hmm.
We were having trouble with coyotes. Ronald wasn't afraid of the coyotes. And one night it was kind of late, and I was watching TV or something or another, sitting around eating popcorn, and I heard a ruckus out in the backyard. And my first thought is probably those coyotes have come too close. And I took off out the door. I got the spotlight. My daddy, he was talking about how we used to do things. There was always a spotlight right next to the door, just in case a booger come around, you know. But really, it was for looking at deer and everything else that might come up in the yard. Daddy had a spotlight there, and I'd run over and grabbed it, and I took off out the back door, and I shined it, and I looked. The coyotes got Ronald by the back, toting him off in the back 40. I thought, man, not Ronald.
There goes Ronald.
He's gone. Mm-hmm. So I go running in the bedroom, and I tell Daddy, and he said, well, he said, there ain't nothing you can do about it tonight. We'll go look for him tomorrow. We go look. No sign of him. He's just toted off. And we had to ride him off. We said, well, that's the end of Ronald, little feist dog. Really upset about it because, again, he was a good dog. We had some cows up in the back 40, and I would go check them from time to time. And about 5 days later, I go up there, and I look and I see this little white spot up in the back corner. I thought, man, that's old Ronald. I go taking off up there, and as I get closer, that little white spot begins to move. I thought, wait a minute, maybe he's made it, right? I get a little closer, and he just kind of stands up. I said, Ronald, you're alive.
Yeah.
Of course, he didn't respond to me, but he's like, here I am, you know, now what do we do? I pick him up, and I said, there's absolutely no way You've lived with the coyotes for 5 days. You got bite marks on his back to prove it. You know, it's just the craziest thing you've ever seen. The dog lived. And I don't know if he must have come to some sort of conclusions, like I got to act like one of them or whatever he did. He made it through, survived the coyote attack, and he lived for 5 or 6 more years after that. Mm-hmm. But I got to thinking about that and how as we live life, you might get into a situation to where this seems hopeless. There's absolutely no way out of this. But if we'll persevere, and that's what Ronald taught me that day, was a lesson of perseverance. He survived.
He was out.
He was out. I had wrote him off. They might be friends that have written you off. You ever been in that situation? Well, he's hopeless. There's no coming back from this situation. But if we can turn to the Lord, lean on him, and just persevere through whatever trial, whatever tribulation, mm-hmm. the Lord can help you out through those things. Even when it seems hopeless.
Even a pack of coyotes.
Even when the coyotes are after you.
I don't know if y'all are like me, but I love bass fish. I love the bass fish. I think God gave us bass fishing. It's just good times. They were fishermen. Makes sense, doesn't
yeah.
it? My daddy was my bass fishing partner. And we would always go up maybe one day during the week of a bass tournament and piddle around, fish around, see if we could get them on a certain bait or whatever, find them in a certain area so that on tournament morning, we'd go right to the spot that they were at. That's kind of our tactic there. Well, we're fishing Gunnersville this weekend that we were talking about, and we'd went up on Thursday. I like to fish Spring Creek area of Gunnersville, which is closer to the city limits, and we were up there fishing around a bridge by the dog food plant. If y'all been up there, you know where that's at. And this was in the day of the Alabama rig. Y'all remember when the Alabama rig come out? It was the hottest thing, buddy. Well, we had us some Alabama rigs, 50-pound braid, and Daddy was sitting there chunking that Alabama rig up around that bridge, and he hooked into one. He said, Oh, Philip, I knew he done had him a good one. He thought he had had about an 8 or 9 pounder on everybody. What he had was 2 4-pounders fighting against themselves on that thing, which he was tickled to death, and I was too. I said, well, that's enough of that. We're not going to fish the spot out. We're going to go. And I said, before we go, I've got this big DT5 crankbait that I've been wanting to throw. And I said, I'm going to just ease right here in this pocket. And there's a long stretch of bank there that comes out about 12 foot of water. And I said, I'm just going to flip it one time. And I took that thing, and you know those big old crankbaits, you can throw them too with a good reel. I reared back and I threw that thing just off the bank. I reeled it down about 4 times, and the first rock it hit, I mean, I felt that thing go down, you know, and it hit that rock. And as soon as it did, it was like it just hung in a cypress stump. And I said, all right. And I reeled down, and about that time, that cypress stump started moving. That's something a cypress stump don't do. And I said, oh, Daddy. I said, just get the net. And it's just peel and drag out through the water. And I said, oh, man, I've caught some big bass, but this was the next level. I've never caught a double digit. So I'm sitting there, and she finally kind of tires out a little bit, and I make some ground back on it, and I'm thinking, all right. By that time, she starts for the top. I could see my line just twisting up. I said, no. I buried that 7-foot rod in water, and I just started cranking it down, and she stayed down. I said, glory, hallelujah. All right, we got her. So I'm reeling her in, and then she makes another break. Well, this time, even though I buried that 7-foot rod as far down as I could bury it, she come to the top, and here she come in all her glory. I'm talking about a bucket mouth like this, and she's just pop, on top of that water, just tail walking. One treble hook on that DT5 in the side of her mouth, and I'm just keeping it tight. Hold it, and it goes down in the water. I said, oh, she's still on. And I'm thinking, this is it. I mean, we're talking about she's from me to the door. Well, she's got one more burst of energy in her. And I'm down to the foam handle on my rod in the water trying to keep her down. And she comes up. She came up. And then I saw that DT5, that blue and orange and silver DT5 just going through the air. And she's just like William Wallace saying, freedom! And she's going across the top of the water and just buries right down in there. I was beyond saying bad words. You've been beyond saying bad words. I dropped my rod there on the front of the boat, and I'm watching those ripples turn back into smooth water where she went back in. And I turned and I had to know what my daddy was doing. And daddy's standing there with the net, not saying anything. He's just looking right there at the water. And I was upset, clearly. Like many of you are shaking your head like, that's here. That's a nightmare you just shared with us, Philip. I was sad about that. But what I got in that moment was a picture of my dad who was so proud to see that bass come out of the water. We'd never seen one that big, and neither one of us in all our life. I mean, 10, 12-pound bass, you don't forget that thing. You're going to have horrible disappointments in your life, throughout your life. But even in those disappointments, if you're willing to, you can think through and find some beauty in those moments. When I think about that bass, I always think about my daddy, my fishing partner, and getting to spend time with my daddy and getting to go fishing and be out there in God's great glory. I'd love to have landed that fish, but looking back now as I get to tell that story and relive that moment with my dad, I think I'm more happy that I didn't catch it than I did.
That's hard to believe.
Don't get me wrong. I would love to have caught that fish and held her, but
you got the memory.
I got the memory, baby. Yeah.
We were in a boat. It was probably around that same time. Had some buddies from Cherokee County. And we wanted to, I'd never really done a lot of jug fishing, what they call jug fishing in the lake. I'd done a lot of trot lining, never done a lot of jug fishing. Or noodling, they call it noodling. They cut up pool noodles about this long, and they tie a string or a line to it and a catfish hook and bait it and just throw it out in the lake. Just let it go bobbing around. Well, that sounded fun. I was 20-some-odd years old. I ain't had nothing else to do, so let's just spend the evening on the lake. And if you'll know, a friend of mine, he's been on the podcast before. His name's Brian Sneed, and he loves to catch anything. If it wiggles, it's got a tail, it doesn't matter, he's going to catch it. And another friend of mine, Evan Morgan, is with us. And Evan is all about giving you an opportunity. You want to be a dummy? Evan will let you be a dummy. He'll give you the opportunity. Eric, you got any friends like that? You want to hurt yourself? Hey, I'll give you the opportunity.
Are you that friend?
We had let the line soak, the noodle soak, and they were ready to go check them. Let's go see if we can find them. So you got to take a spotlight, and you're out looking for these pool noodles floating around in the lake. Well, you know, you're looking for ripples because that's what happens when a catfish gets it. It bobs up and down, creates all these ripples. So I'm Brian's in charge. He's in the front of the boat. He's manning the spotlight. I'm sitting next to Evan. Evan's driving the boat. Brian spots some ripples. He said, there's one. As we get closer to it, realize it's not one of our noodles that we had put out, our hooks. It was a snake going across the lake. And I knew immediately, I thought, Brian's going to try to catch that snake. That's what he's going to do. And I thought, but Evan won't go close enough for him to catch the snake. Brian has, you know, it like laser beamed that line. He's just focused on that snake. And we go past it. I thought, we're going to get through this. We're going to go catch a catfish, not a snake. Brian turns around. He says, I want to catch that snake. I hang my head. Evan don't say a word. He just peels that old boat right around. I said, Evan, don't do it. He don't say a word. He just grins like a professional boater, like a captain. He just captains that boat right back around. He gets right next to the snake, if you've ever seen a snake swim, you know, he's a little bit all over the place. He's here, he's there. And we're getting the boat next to it, and I'm still steady begging, don't catch the snake. Let's leave the snake ain't hurt us, ain't bothering us. Let's go fishing. That's what we need to be doing. He's going to catch the snake. Evan gets right up next to the snake, gets a little close, and I'm pleading one last time, Brian, please don't catch the snake. He's not heard me yet. Or if he's heard me, he's not adhered to my advice. He ain't listening. He leans over the boat. He gets right next to the snake. And he gathers it about the belly, about the middle of the snake. And in slow motion again, similar when I threw the rock, I see in slow motion this snake turn and it just
gets him right there. What does he do?
He throws it straight up.
Snake falls in the boat. We have to get the paddle, get the snake out of the boat. He starts hollering, "It bit me! It bit me!" Brian, that's a snake, friend.
That's what they do.
What did you expect the snake to do as it's swimming across the lake and you grab it up by the middle of it? It's going to bite you. Then he starts hollering, "My hand's going numb. My hand's going numb." He's done. It is mine. He's died from the snake bite. I said, "You big old dummy, it was just a banded water snake. Your hand's not going numb. Let's go catch some catfish, you know, like get over what you're doing." So he finally calms down. He lives through the snake bite. We live to catch some catfish. But I thought about that story. Oftentimes we find the devil here or there, a snake here or there, and then we're surprised at the response that we get from the devil or the snake, right? Mm-hmm. We find ourselves saying, "Well, I didn't think that would happen.
I didn't know he'd bite me.
I didn't know he'd bite me." I'm going to tell you tonight, friends, the devil is going to act like the devil. Snake is going to act like a snake. So when we see that danger, when we recognize it, The Lord will give you. I was trying to be the good angel and the bad angel, right? I was trying to be the good angel, saying, "Don't catch the snake." When you hear the Holy Spirit speaking to you, say, "Don't mess with that. Don't deal with that." Yeah. Take that advice.
Amen. Amen. I want to share your testimony before we get in the Word.
So before we get in the Word, I'll tell you, I'm so thankful to be here tonight. I really am thankful for each one of y'all that are here tonight, and thankful for the opportunity to talk about the Lord a little bit. And when I was 12 years old, let me back up a little bit before that. I was about 8 or 9, and I was sitting in a pew, and my mom looked down and said, "You need to go pray." Well, that just broke my heart. Of course I need to go pray. Mama thinks I need to go pray. I need to go pray, right? So I went to the altar, and I did all the things that I was supposed to do, whatever I was supposed to do. I appeased my mom at 8 years old. I went to the altar. By 12 years old, my grandfather passed away. And I was laying in bed contemplating what had taken place. And I looked up to my grandfather tremendously. He was a hero of the faith and just one of those men in my life that really impacted me. And I'm laying in bed and the Holy Spirit just kind of settled on me and convicted my heart. And he said, "If you don't get saved, you'll never be able to see your grandfather again." And the reason I knew that is because I knew my grandfather was a saved individual. He professed his faith and he lived that faith out. And I knew if that anybody had made it into heaven, that Papa had made it into heaven. And that night, I promised, I said, "Lord, if you'll just let me get back to the church, I will give my heart to you. I'll repent. And I will live for you." And at 12 years old, I was saved. And I was thankful for that, baptized. And I grew up in the church. My parents raised me in the church. But I want to tell you tonight, part of my testimony was, is the pastor and I were talking earlier, right? There's times that you walk away from the Lord. Maybe you've been saved and maybe you've just kind of walked away. Maybe you're raised in church, but you never really committed to Christ. And part of my testimony is that is Philip and I, we've been friends since we've been old enough to know friends.
Yeah.
I don't
remember the first time I met you.
Really don't. But we've been through a lot of life together and we lived for the world a lot. But at 26 years old, I got married. And the railroad had sent me to Ohio and said, "That's where you got to go. You're going to be placed in Ohio." And I'm with my young bride there in Ohio, and it's just her and I. And for the first time in my life at 26 years old, I realized I can no longer ride Mama and Daddy's coattail. I can no longer let them be my intercessor to Christ. I am now responsible for a family. And I'm driving through Ohio. Anybody ever been? Who's ever been to Ohio? I'd never been outside of Alabama, okay? I mean, I'd been there, but I was now living in Ohio. And in my mind, I thought it was a desolate place. Like, how in the world is God going to have Christians in Ohio, right? That was how narrow-minded I was. I had gathered God into a box in Hayden, Alabama, and I said, there's nobody that worships God that is a Christian and going to live for God like we do in Hayden, Alabama. Well, boy, was I wrong, right? And so I'm driving down the road, and I'm thinking to myself, and I'm praying, and I said, God, if you're going to have to give us a church here, that's all I know to do. That's the first thing I should have done, right? Well, how often do you find yourself saying, well, I better turn to the Lord. I better start praying, when that's the first thing I should have done.
Yeah.
So I pray and I said, God, give us a church. We've got to have a church to go to. I pulled in to get my car washed. My truck, the railroad required you to have a clean truck. I pull in and lo and behold, there's a church there and they're giving away hot dogs and washing cars. Well, I didn't need a car wash because I just went through the car wash, but I was hungry. So I pulled in and I said, hey, I'd like to get a hot dog since you got one. And they said, well, we're fresh out of hot dogs. Matter of fact, so what kind of place is this, right? He said, well, but I tell you what, if you'll come to church tomorrow, which this is a Saturday, if you'll come to church tomorrow, we'll take you out to eat afterwards. I said, hey, that sounds like a good deal. I'll look on the little card that the pastor gave me. I had the address, and I ended up going, taking Sarah, and we went to church that morning. I walk in, similar to the young man that just walked in there. The pastor's eyes lit up. He said, you're here.
You said you were going
to
feed me.
I said I'd be, wouldn't I? He said, buddy, you know how many people say they're going to come to church tomorrow and then they never show up? I said, well, it's a little bit different. I think the Lord kind of put this into place. And we absolutely fell in love with that church and those people. And God opened my eyes to how large He is. He's just such a big God. Mm-hmm. And that's when I truly started committing my life to Christ. You may be here today and you've never really committed. You may have been saved years ago, but the pastor tonight said there's a difference in knowing Christ and being committed to Christ.
That's right.